Resident Evil Zero, written by S.D. Perry.
Prologue. The train swayed and rocked as it traveled through the raccoon woods. The thunder of its wheels echoed by a thundering twilight sky. Bill Nyberg rifled through the Hardy file, his briefcase on the floor at his feet. Been a long day, and the gentle rocking of the train soothed him. It was late after 8, but the Ecliptic Express was mostly full, as it often was for the dinner hour. It was a company train, and since the renovation, Umbrella had gone to great expense to make it classically retro. Everything from velvet seats to chandeliers in the dining car. A lot of employees brought family or friends along to experience the atmosphere. There were usually a number of out-of-towners on board as well, having caught the connection out of Latham, but Nyberg would bet that 9 out of 10 of them worked for Umbrella too. Without the pharmaceutical giant's support, Raccoon City wouldn't even be a wide spot on the road. One of the car attendants walked past, nodding at Nyberg when he saw the Umbrella pin on his lapel. The small pin marked him as a regular commuter. Nyberg nodded back. A flicker of lightning outside was quickly followed by another rumble of thunder. It seemed there was a summer storm brewing. Even in the cool comfort of the train, the air seemed charged, thick with the tension of impending rain. And my coat is? In the trunk? Wonderful. His car was at the end of the station lot, too. He'd be drenched before he got halfway across. Sighing, he returned his attention to the file. Settling back into his seat, he'd already reviewed the material a number of times, but he wanted to be on top of every detail. A 10-year-old girl named Teresa Hardy had been involved in a clinical trial for a new pediatric heart medication, Valafin. As it turned out, the drug did exactly what it was supposed to do, but it also caused renal failure, and in Teresa Hardy's case, the damage had been severe. She'd survive, but would likely spend the rest of her life on dialysis, and the family's lawyer was seeking hefty charges. The case had to be settled quickly, and the Hardy family kept quiet before they could drag their ailing, cherub-cheeked Moppet in front of a media-packed courtroom, which is where Nyberg and his team came in. The trick was to offer just enough to make the family happy, but not as much to encourage their lawyer, one of those strip mall, "we don't get paid unless you get paid" outfits, to get greedy. Nyberg had a knack for handling ambulance chasers. He'd have it settled before little Teresa got back from her first appointment. It was what Umbrella paid him for. Rain splattered loudly against the window, as if someone had thrown a bucket of water against the pane. Startled, Nyberg turned to look out just as several dull thumps sounded on the train's roof. Terrific. Had to be a hailstorm or something. A crackle of lightning flickered across the thickening darkness, illuminating the small but steep hill that marked the deepest part of the forest. Nyberg looked up and saw a tall figure silhouetted against the trees at the crest of the hill. Someone in a long coat or robe, the dark fabric rippling in the wind. The figure raised long arms to the raging sky, and the stuttering of lightning was gone, plunging the strange, dramatic scene back into darkness. "What the?" Nyberg began, and more water splashed across the glass. Except it wasn't water, because water didn't stick in great, dark clumps. Water didn't ooze and break apart, revealing dozens of shining needle teeth. Nyberg blinked, not sure what he was seeing as someone started to scream at the other end of the car, a long, rising wail, as more of the dark, slug-like creatures, each the size of a man's fist, smashed against the window. The sound of hail on the roof went from a patter to a storm, the thunder of it drowning out the screamer, the screams of many now. "Not hail! That's not hail!" Hot panic shot through Nyberg's body, sending him to his feet. He made it to the aisle before the glass behind him shattered, before glass all through the train was shattering. The high, jagged sound of it melting with the screams of terror, all of it nearly lost beneath the ongoing thunder of attack. As the lights went out, something cold and wet and very much alive landed on the back of his neck and began to feed. End of prologue.
Chapter 1. The helicopter spun through the darkness over Raccoon Forest. Rebecca Chambers sat up straight, willing herself to look as calm as the men around her. The mood was solemn, as dark and clouded as the skies whipping past, all jokes and jabs left behind at the briefing. This wasn't a training exercise. 3 more people, hikers, had gone missing, in a forest as large as the one surrounding Raccoon. Not that unusual, but with the rash of savage murders that had terrorized the small city over the past several weeks, missing had taken on a new meaning. Only a few days earlier, there had been a 9th victim found. This one is ripped up and savaged, as it had been run through a meat grinder. People were being killed, savagely attacked by someone or something around the outskirts of the city, and the raccoon police weren't getting anywhere. The city's chapter of STARS had finally been called in to investigate. Rebecca raised her chin slightly, a pulse of pride edging through her nervousness. Although her degree was in biochemistry, she'd been tapped as Bravo Team's field medic, joining the team less than a month earlier. "My first mission, which means I'd better not cock it up." She took a deep breath, letting it out slowly, working to keep her expression casual. Edward shot her an encouraging smile, and Sully leaned across the crowded cabin to reassuringly pat her leg. "So much for looking cool." As smart as she was, as ready as she is to begin her career, she couldn't help her age, or the fact that she looked even younger. At 18, she was the youngest person to be accepted into STARS, since its creation in 1967. And as the only female in Raccoon's B team, everyone treated her like their kid sister. She sighed, smiling back at Edward, nodding at Sully. It wasn't so bad having a handful of hard-ass big brothers watching out for her, as long as they understood she could take care of herself when the need arose. "I think," she silently amended. It was her first assignment after all, and though she was in good shape physically, her combat experience had been limited to video simulations and weekend missions. The Special Tactics and Rescue Service wanted her in their labs, eventually, but field time was mandatory and she needed the experience. Anyway, they'd be sweeping the woods as a team. If they did run across the people or animals that they'd been attacking raccoon citizens, she'd have backup. There was a flicker of lightning to the north. Close. The subsequent thunder lost to the drone of the copter. Rebecca leaned forward slightly, scanning the dark. It had been clear all day, the clouds rolling in just before sunset. They were definitely going to go home wet. At least it would be a warm rain. She supposed it could be a lot. Boom! She'd been so focused on the coming storm, for a crazed split second, she thought it was thunder. Even as the copter tipped wildly and dropped, a terrible rising, clattering whine filling the cabin, the floor vibrating beneath her boots. A hot smell of burning metal and ozone singed her nose. "Lightning? What happened?" someone shouted. "Noriko riding shotgun." "Engine failure," the pilot, Kevin Dooley, shouted back. "Emergency landing." Rebecca grabbed a strut and held on, looking to the others so she wouldn't have to watch the trees rushing up at them. She saw the grim, determined set to Sully's jaw, Edward's clenched teeth. The look of anxiety shot between Richard and Forrest as they grabbed for struts or handholds on the shuddering wall. In the front, Enrico was shouting something else, something she couldn't make out over the scream of the dying engine. Rebecca closed her eyes for a beat, thought of her parents, and then the ride was too wild for her to think. The crack and crash of tree branches battering the helicopter too loud and jarring for her to do anything but hope. The copter spun out of control, whipping around in a tilted, sickening, lurching circle. It was over a second later. The silence was so sudden and complete that she thought she'd gone deaf. All movement stopped. And then she heard the tick of metal, the strangled last gasp of the engine, and her own thundering heart, and realized they were down. Kevin had done it, and without a single bounce. "Everyone okay?" Enrico Marini, their captain, had craned around in his seat. Rebecca added her own shaky nod to the chorus of affirmations. "Nice flying, Kev," Forrest said, and there was another chorus. Rebecca couldn't have agreed more. "Is the radio down?" Rico asked the pilot, who was tapping at controls and flipping switches. "Looks like everything electrical's fried," Kevin said. "Must have been lightning." "We weren't struck directly, but it was close enough. Beacon 2. Can it be repaired?" Enrico addressed it as an open question, looking at Richard, their communications officer. Richard, in turn, looked at Edward, who shrugged. Edward was the Bravo team's mechanic. "I'll take a look," Edward said. "But if Kevin says the transmitter's toast, it's probably toast." The captain nodded slowly, absently brushing at his mustache with one hand as he considered their options. After a few seconds, he sighed. "I called in when we were hit, but I don't know if it went through," he said. "They'll have our last coordinates, though. If we don't report in pretty soon, they'll come looking." They was the STARS Alpha team. Rebecca nodded along with the others, not sure if she should be disappointed or not. First mission over before it started. Enrico wiped at his mustache again, smoothing it down at the corners of his mouth with the thumb and forefinger of one hand. "Everybody out. Let's see where we are." They filed out of the cabin, the reality of the situation hitting Rebecca as they gathered together in the dark. They were incredibly lucky to be alive. Struck by lightning, in her own way to search for mad killers, no less, she thought, amazed at the very idea. Even if the mission was over, this was hands down the most exciting thing that had ever happened to her. The air was warm and heavy with impending rain, the shadows deep. Small animals rustled through the underbrush. A pair of flashlights clicked on, the beams cutting through the dark as Enrico and Edward moved around the helicopter examining the damage. Rebecca fished her own flashlight out of her bag, relieved that she hadn't forgotten to pack it. "How are you holding up?" Rebecca turned and saw Ken Sully Sullivan grinning down at her. He had his weapon out, the 9mm muzzle pointed to the overcast sky, a grim reminder of why they were here in the first place. "You guys really know how to make an entrance, don't you?" she said, smiling back at him. The tall man laughed, his teeth very white against the darkness of his skin. "Actually, we always do this for the new recruits. It's a waste of helicopters, but we have our reputations to maintain." She was about to ask how the police chief felt about the expense. She was new to the area, but heard that Chief Irons was notoriously stingy when Enrico joined them, pulling his own weapon, raising his voice so everyone could hear. "All right, people, let's fan out. Investigate the surrounding area. Kev, stay with the copter. The rest of you keep close. I just want this area secured. Alpha could be here in as little as an hour." He didn't complete the thought that it could be a hell of a lot longer, but he didn't need to. For the moment, at least, they were on their own. Rebecca slid the 9mm out of its holster, carefully checking the magazine and chamber as she'd been taught, raising the muzzle to avoid inadvertently aiming at anyone. The others were moving out to either side, checking weapons and turning on flashlights. She took a deep breath and started to walk straight ahead, swinging the flashlight's beam around in front of her. Enrico was only a few meters away, moving parallel to her position. A low mist had cropped up, wafting through the underbrush like a ghostly tide. There was a parting in the trees about a dozen meters ahead, a path big enough to be a narrow road, though it was hard to tell for the mist. It was quiet except for a rumble of thunder. The sound was closer than she'd expected. The storm was almost upon them. She'd swept the beam across trees and darkness and trees again, then a glint of what looked like. "Captain, look!" Enrico stepped to her side, and within seconds, five more beams of light had jerked toward the gleam of metal she'd seen, illuminating what was, in fact, a narrow dirt road and an overturned jeep. Rebecca could see MP etched on the side as the team moved closer. Military police. She saw a pile of clothes spilling out from beneath the shattered windshield and frowned, stepping in for a better look, and then she was holstering her weapon and fumbled for her medkit, hurrying over to kneel next to the crashed jeep, knowing even before she sat back on her heels that there was nothing she could do. There was too much blood. Two men. One had been thrown clear, was crumpled a few meters away. The other, the fair-haired man in front of her, was still half under the jeep. Both wore military fatigues. Their faces and upper bodies had been badly mutilated. There was massive tears through the skin and muscle, deep gashes across their throats. No way the crash had done all of it. Rebecca reflexively reached down and felt for a pulse, noting the chill of the flesh. She stood and moved to the other body, again checking for any sign of life. But he was as cold as the first. "You think they're from Ragathon?" someone asked. "Richard." Rebecca saw a briefcase near the pale, outstretched hand of the second corpse and crouched, walked to it, half listening to Enrico's answer as she flipped the case's lid. "It's a closest base, but look at the insignia. They're jarheads. Could be from Donald," Enrico said. A clipboard was on top of a handful of files, official-looking document attached to it. There was a small headshot in the upper left corner of a handsome, dark-eyed young man in civvies. Neither of the corpses looked like him. Rebecca lifted it out, reading silently, and then her mouth went dry. "Captain," she managed standing. Enrico looked up from where he was crouched next to the jeep. "Hmm? What happened?" She read the pertinent parts aloud. "Court order for transportation. Prisoner William Cohen, ex-lieutenant, 26 years old. Court-martialed and sentenced to death, July 22nd. Prisoner is to be transferred to the Ragathon base for execution." The lieutenant had been convicted of first-degree murder. Edward pulled the clipboard from her hands, saying what was already formulating in Rebecca's mind, his voice heavy with anger. "Those poor soldiers. They were just doing their jobs, and that scum murdered them and escaped." Enrico took the clipboard away from him, scanning it quickly. "All right, everyone. Change of plan. We may have an escape killer on our hands. Let's separate and survey the immediate area. See if we can't locate Lieutenant Billy. Keep your guard up and report back in 15, regardless." There were nods all around. Rebecca took a deep breath as the others started to move out, checking her watch, determined to be as professional as anyone else on the team. 15 minutes alone? No big deal. What could happen in 15 minutes? Alone. In the dark, dark woods. Got your radio? Rebecca jumped and turned at the sound of Edward's voice. The big man standing directly behind her. The mechanic patted her on the shoulder, smiling. Easy, kiddo. Rebecca smiled back at him, though she despised being called kiddo. Edward was only 26, for God's sake. She tapped the unit on her belt. Check. Edward nodded, stepping away. His message was clear and reassuring. She wasn't really alone, not as long as she had a radio. She looked around, saw that several of the others were already out of sight. Kevin, still in the pilot's seat, was going through the briefcase that she'd found. He saw her and snapped her a salute. Rebecca gave him a thumbs up and squared her shoulders, drawing her weapon once more and heading out into the night. Overhead, thunder rumbled. Albert Wesker sat in the treatment plant's Con B1, the room dark except for the flicker from a bank of observation monitors, six of them, each changing view on 5-second rotations. There were shots from every level of the training facility, the upper and lower floors of the factory and the water treatment plant, and the tunnels that connected the two. He gazed at the soundless black and white screens without really looking at them. Most of his attention was focused on the incoming transmissions from the cleanup crew. The three-man team, well, two and a pilot, was en route by copter and mostly silent. They were professionals, after all, not given to a macho banter of juvenile jokes, which meant Wesker was hearing a lot of static. That was all right. The white noise went well with the blank and staring faces he saw on the monitors. The ravaged bodies slumped in corners, the men who'd been infected shambling aimlessly through the empty corridors, like the Arclay Mansion and labs only a few miles away. White Umbrella's private training grounds and connected facilities had been hit by the virus. ETA, 30 minutes. Over, the pilot said, his voice crackling through the dimly lit room. Wesker leaned in. Copy that. Silence again. There was no need to talk about what would happen when they reached the train. And though the channel was scrambled, it was best not to say any more than was necessary. Anyway, Umbrella had been built on a foundation of secrecy and characteristic of the pharmaceutical giant that was still honored by everyone in the upper echelons of management. Even in the company's legitimate dealings, the less said, the better. It's all coming down, Wesker thought idly, watching the screens. Spencer's mansion and the surrounding labs had gone down in the middle of May. White Umbrella's take on it had been accidental. The lab locked down until the infected researchers and staff became ineffective. Mistakes happened, after all. But the training facility nightmare that was still playing out in front of him had followed not a month later. And only a few hours ago, the engineer of Umbrella's private train, the Ecliptic Express, had pushed the biohazard panic button. So, the lockdown didn't work. The virus leaked and spread. It's that simple, isn't it? There was a handful of infected grunts in the training facility's dining room, one of them walking in looping circles around the once handsome table. It was leaking some viscous fluid out of a nasty head wound as he'd staggered along, obviously to his whereabouts, to pain, to everywhere. Wesker tapped on the control panel beneath the monitor, keeping the surveillance from moving to the next picture. He sat back in his chair, watching the doomed walker as he circled the table yet again. Sabotage, maybe, he said softly. He couldn't be sure. It was set up to look natural. A spill at the Arclay lab, an incomplete lockdown. A few weeks later, a couple of missing hikers, likely caused by an escaped test subject or two, and a few weeks more, infected at a second White Umbrella facility. It was highly improbable that one of the virus carriers would just happen to blunder their way to one of Raccoon's other labs, but it was possible. Except now there was a train to consider, and it didn't feel like an accident. It felt planned. Hell, I might have done it myself if I had thought of it. He'd been looking for a way out for some time now, tired of working for people who were obviously his inferiors, and well aware that too much time on White Umbrella's payroll wasn't good for the health. Now they wanted him to lead the stars into the Arclay Mansion and labs to find out just how well Umbrella's war pets fared against armed soldiers. Did they give a shit if he died in the process? Not so long as he recorded the data first, he was sure. Researchers, doctors, techs, anyone who worked for White Umbrella for more than a decade or two had a habit of winding up missing or dead. Eventually, George Trevor and his family, Dr. Marcus, Dees, Dr. Darius, Alexander Ashford, and those were just some of the bigger names. God only knew how many of the little people had ended up in shallow graves somewhere, or turned up as test subjects A, B, and C. The corner of Wesker's mouth twitched. Come to think of it, he had a fairly good idea of how many. He'd been working for White Umbrella since the late 70s, most of that in the Raccoon area, and had watched the docs run through quite a few test subjects, many he had helped procure himself. It was well past his time to get out, and if he could get the data the big boys wanted, he might just be able to throw himself a little bidding war, a going away present to fund his retirement. White Umbrella wasn't the only group interested in bioweapons research, the first to clean up for the train, and this place, he thought. Watching as the soldier with the head wound tripped over a chair leg and went down hard. The training facility was connected to the private water treatment plant by the underground tunnel. It would all have to be cleared. A few seconds passed and the soldier on screen staggered to his feet again, continuing on his mindless quest to nowhere. And now there appeared to be a dinner fork sticking out of his upper right shoulder, a little souvenir from his fall. The soldier didn't notice, of course. A charming little disease. It had been the same kind of scene at the Arcalay Labs, Wesker was sure. The last few desperate phone calls for their quarantine lab had painted a vivid picture of just how effective the T-virus really was. That would have to be cleaned up too. But not until he got the Stars out there for a little training exercise. It would be an interesting match. The Stars were good. He'd handpicked half of them himself. But they'd never seen anything like the T-virus. The dying soldier on the screen was a prime example. Hot with the recombinant virus. He went on with his endless tour of the dining car, slow and mostly brainless. He also felt no pain, and he would attack anyone or anything that happened to cross his path with no hesitation, the virus continuously seeking new hosts to infect. Although the original spill was already airborne, after this long, the virus would only be spread by bodily fluids, by blood, or say, a bite? And the soldier was just a man after all. The T-virus worked on all manners of living tissue, and there were a number of other animals to see in action, from laboratory triumphs to local wildlife. Enrico should have the Bravos out by now, searching for the latest missing hikers, and it was doubtful they'd find anything where he was planning to look. Sometime soon, Wesker would see about organizing an Alpha Bravo campout at the deserted Spencer Mansion. Then he'd wipe out the evidence and be on his merry, wealthy way. To hell with White Umbrella, to hell with his life as a double agent, playing with the petty lives of men and women he didn't give a shit about. The dying man on the screen fell down once again, dragged himself to his feet, and soldiered on. "Go for the gold, baby," Wesker said, and chuckled, the sound echoing out through the empty dark. Something moved in the bushes, something bigger than a squirrel. Rebecca spun toward the sound, aiming the flashlight of the 9mm at the shrub. The light caught the last of the movement, and the leaves still shaking, the beam from her flashlight trembling along with them. She took a step closer, swallowing dryly, counting backward from 10. Whatever it was gone now. A raccoon is all, or maybe somebody's dog got loose. She looked at her watch, sure that it must be time to head back, and saw that she'd been on her own for just over 5 minutes. She hadn't seen or heard anyone else since she'd walked away from the helicopter. It was as though everyone else had fallen off the face of the earth. "Or I have," she thought darkly, lowering the handgun slightly, turning to check her position. She'd been heading roughly southwest from the landing point. She'd continue on a few more minutes then. Rebecca blinked, surprised to see a metal wall beneath the flashlight's beam not 10 meters away. She played the light across the surface, saw windows, a door. "A train," she breathed, frowning slightly. It seemed like she remembered something about a track up here. Umbrella, the pharmaceutical corporation, had a private line that ran from Latham to Raccoon City, didn't they? She wasn't too certain on the history. She wasn't a local, but she was pretty sure the company had been founded in Raccoon. Umbrella's headquarters had moved off to Europe some time ago, but they still owned practically the entire town. So what's it doing sitting up here, dead in the woods at this time of night? She ran the light up and down the train, saw that there was 5 tall cars. Each 2 stories high. Ecliptic Express was written just below the roof of the car in front of her. There were a few lights on, but they were faint, barely casting through the windows, several of which were broken. She thought she saw a person's silhouette near one of the unbroken ones, but it wasn't moving. Someone asleep, maybe? Or hurt, or dead. Maybe this thing is stopped because Billy Cohen found his way on the track. God, that was a thought. He could be inside now with hostages. She should definitely call for backup. She started to reach for her radio, then paused. Or maybe the train broke down 2 weeks ago. It's been here ever since. and all you'll find inside is a colony of woodchucks. Wouldn't the team have a laugh over that? They'd be nice about it, but she'd have to endure weeks, maybe months of gentle ribbing, calling for backup over a deserted train. She checked her watch again, saw that the 2 minutes had passed since the last check, and felt a drop of cool liquid splash on her nose, then another on her arm, then the soft musical patter of 100 drops against leaves and dirt, then thousands as the sky opened up, the storm finally beginning. The rain decided it for her, a quick look inside before she headed back, just to make sure everything was the way it was supposed to be. If Billy wasn't around, she'd at least be able to report back that the train appeared to be clear. And if he was... "You'll have to deal with me," she murmured, the sound lost in the growing storm as she approached the silent train. End of chapter 1. Chapter 2. Billy sat on the floor between two rows of seats, working at the handcuffs with the paperclip he'd found on the floor. One of the cuffs was off, the right one, bashed open with the Jeep had gone over, but unless he wanted to wear a jangly and rather incriminating bracelet, he had to get the other one off. "Get it off and get the hell out of here," he thought, pushing at the lock with a thin piece of metal. He didn't look up. He didn't need to remind himself of his whereabouts. He didn't have to. The air was heavy with the scent of blood. It was splattered all over the place, and although the train car he'd found was empty of bodies, he had no doubt that the other cars were full of them. The dogs. Has to be those dogs. Though who let them on? The same guy he'd seen in the woods. Had to be. The guy who'd stepped in front of the Jeep, sending it crashing out of control. Billy had been thrown clear and, except for a few bruises, was pretty much unscathed. His MP escort, Dixon and Elder, had been trapped beneath the overturned vehicle. They'd been alive, though. The human road stop, whoever he was nowhere to be seen. It had been a tough minute or two, standing there in the gathering dark, the hot, oily smell of gas in his face, his body aching, trying to decide, run for it or radio for help. He didn't want to die. Didn't deserve to die. Unless being trusted and stupid was an offense worthy of death. Couldn't leave them, either. Two men pinned under a ton of metal, injured and barely conscious. Their choice, to take some unpaved back road trail to the base, meant it could be a long time before anyone happened upon them. Yeah, they were delivering him to his execution, but they were following orders. It wasn't personal, and they didn't deserve to die any more than he did. He decided to split the difference, radio for help, then run like hell. But then the dogs had come. Big, wet, freaky-looking things, 3 of them. And then he was running for his life, because there was something very, very wrong about them. He knew it even before they'd attacked Dixon, ripping his throat out as they pulled him from beneath the Jeep. Billy thought he heard a click, and tried the handcuffs, hissing air through his teeth when the metal latch refused to budge. Goddamn thing. Paperclip was a lucky find. Though there was shit everywhere. Papers, bags, coats, personal belongings, and blood on just about everything. Maybe he'd find something more useful, even if he looked harder. Though it would mean staying on the train, and that didn't sound like much fun at all. After all, he knew this was where those dogs lived, holed up here with the crazy asshole who liked to step in front of moving cars. He'd only come aboard to avoid the dogs, to regroup, try and figure out his next move. And it turns out to be the slaughterhouse special, he thought, shaking his head. Talk about out of the frying pan into the fire. Whatever the hell was going on out in these woods, he didn't want to be a part of it. He'd get the cuff off, find himself some kind of weapon, maybe grab a wallet or two out of the blood-splattered luggage. He had no doubt that the owners were long past caring and hightailed it back to civilization. Then Canada, or Mexico maybe? He'd never stolen before, never considered leaving the country, but he had to think like a criminal now if he wanted to survive. He heard thunder, then gentle taps of rain against some of the unbroken windows. The taps became a tattoo. The blood-scented air thinning with a gust of wind through a shattered pane. Dandy. Apparently he'd be hiking out in a rainstorm. Whatever, he mumbled, and threw the useless paperclip against the seat in front of him. The situation was seriously foobar. He doubted it could get much worse. Billy froze, held his breath. The outside door to the train was open. He could hear the metal sliding, the rain getting louder, then quieter again. Someone had come aboard. Shit. What if it was the maniac with the dogs? Or what if someone found the Jeep? He found a sick, heavy knot in his stomach. Could be.
Could be that someone else from the base had decided to use the back road tonight. Maybe had already called in when they'd seen the crash, and learned that there should have been a third passenger, a certain dead man walking. Maybe he was already being haunted. He didn't move, straining to hear the movements of whoever had come in from the rain. For a few seconds, nothing. Then he heard a soft tread, one step, then another, moving away from him toward the front of the car. Billy leaned forward, carefully sliding his dog tags under his collar so they wouldn't jingle, moving slowly, until he could just see around the edge of the aisle seat. Someone was stepping through the connecting door. Thin, short, a girl or a young man, maybe, dressed in a Kevlar vest and army green. He could just make out a few letters on the back of the vest, an S, a T, an A, and then he or she was gone. Stars. Had they sent out a team looking for him? Couldn't be. Not so fast. The Jeep had just crashed maybe an hour ago. Tops. And the Stars didn't have a military affiliation. They were a PD offshoot. No one could have called them in. It probably had to do with the dogs he saw. Obviously some mutant feral pack. The Stars usually dealt with the weird shit that local cops couldn't or wouldn't handle. Or maybe they'd come in to investigate whatever had gone down on the train. Doesn't matter why, does it? They'd have guns. If they figured out who you are, this taste of freedom will be your last. Get out of here. Now. With the man-eating dogs running around in the woods? Not without a weapon. No way. There had to be some kind of security on board. A rented uniform with a gun. He just had to look. It would be a risk, with the Stars on board. But there was only one of them after all. If he had to, Billy shook his head. He'd seen his share of death in Special Forces. If it came down to it, here and now, he'd fight, or run. He wouldn't kill. Not ever again. At least not one of the good guys. Billy crawled to his feet, keeping low, the handcuffs dangling from his wrist. He'd look through the stuff in his car first, then move away from the Star's interloper, see what he could find. No point in having a confrontation if it could be avoided. He'd just... Bam! 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 Three shots from the car ahead. A pause, then three, four more, then nothing. Apparently not all the train cars were empty. The knot in his stomach tightened. But he didn't let it slow him down as he picked up the first briefcase he saw and started to dig. The first train car was empty of life, but something very bad had occurred here, no question. A crash? No. There was no structural damage. But so much blood. Rebecca closed the door behind her, shutting out the thickening curtain of rain and staring at the chaos around her. The cabin had been a nice one. All dark wood and expensive carpeting, the light fixtures antique, the wallpaper flocked. Now there were newspapers, suitcases, coats, bags open, and spilled across the floor. It looked like there had been a crash. And the drips and smears of blood that liberally dappled the cabin's walls and seats backed up the scenario. Except where are the passengers? She stepped further into the train car, aiming the handgun up and down the aisle. There were a few low lights on, enough to see, but the shadows were deep. Nothing moved. The back of the seat to her left was stained with blood. She reached out and touched the large splotch and wiped her hand on her pants, grimacing. It was wet. Lights are on, blood's fresh. Whatever happened, it happened recently. Lieutenant Billy, maybe? He was wanted for murder. Unless he had a gang with him, though, it didn't seem likely. The destruction was too widespread, too extreme, more like a natural disaster than some kind of hostage situation. Or more like the Forest murders. She nodded inwardly, taking a deep breath. The killers must have struck again. The bodies that had been recovered had been torn apart, mutilated, and the crime scenes had probably looked exactly like this blood-splattered train car. She should get off now. Radio the captain, calling the rest of her team. She started to turn back to the door and hesitated. I could secure the train first. Ridiculous. It'd be crazy to stay here by herself. Stupid and dangerous. No one would expect her to check out a murder scene alone. Assuming anyone had been murdered. For all she knew, there'd been a shooting or something, and the train had been evacuated. No, that's stupid. There'd be cops all over the place. EMTs, helicopters, reporters. Whatever happened here, I'm the first one on the scene. And securing the scene is the first priority.
She couldn't help wondering what the guys might say when they saw her handling things herself. They'd stop calling her kiddo, for one thing. At the very least, her rookie status would be behind her that much quicker. She could take a quick look around, nothing major. And if things seemed the slightest bit dangerous, she'd call in the team, pronto. She nodded to herself. Right. She could handle a look-see. No problem. A deep breath and she started for the front of the car, carefully stepping through the scattered luggage. When she reached the connecting door, she braced herself and quickly stepped through, opening the second door before she lost her nerve. Oh no. The first car had been bad, but here, there were people. 3, 4, 5, that she could see from where she stood, and all of them obviously dead. Faces ravaged by unknown claws, bodies drenched in dark wetness. A few were slumped in seats, as if they'd been brutally murdered where they'd been sitting. The smell of death was a palpable thing, like copper and feces, like rotting fruit on a hot day. The door automatically closed behind her, her heart beating fast, faintly aware that she was way out of her league. She needed to call for help, and then she heard the whispering, and realized that she wasn't alone. She aimed her weapon at the empty aisle ahead, not sure where it was coming from, her heartbeat going double time. "Identify yourself," she said, her voice firmer and more authoritative than she'd expected. The whispering continued, choking and distant, strangely muted in the otherwise silent car, like she imagined a crazed killer might sound, sitting and whispering to himself after a murder spree. She was about to repeat herself when she saw the source of the whispering, halfway up the aisle on the floor. It was a tiny transistor radio, apparently tuned to the AM news station. She walked toward it, dazed by a sudden rush of relief. She was alone, after all. She stopped in front of the radio, lowering her semi-automatic. There was a body in the window seat to her left, and after an initial glance, she avoided looking at it. The man's throat had been slashed, and his eyes had been rolled back in his head. His gray face and tattered clothes were shining, viscous-looking fluids, making him look like a zombie from a bad horror movie. She bent and picked up the radio, smirking at herself in spite of the fear that had coursed through her. Her crazed killer was a woman delivering a news report. The reception was bad, the tiny unit hissing static at every other sentence. Okay, so she was an idiot. In any case, it was time to call Enrico, and Rebecca turned, thinking she'd get better reception if she stepped back outside, and the movement that came from the window seat was so slow and subtle that for a moment, she thought it was just the rain she was seeing. Then the movement groaned, a deep, low sound of misery, and she understood that it wasn't the rain at all. The corpse had risen from his seat and was moving towards her. His misshapen head lolled back to the side, cruelly exposing the mauled flesh of his throat, and the moaning grew deeper, more yearning, as he stretched his arms out in front, his ruined face dripping blood and slime. She dropped the radio and took one stumbling step back, horrified. She'd been wrong. He wasn't dead, but he was obviously out of his mind with pain. She had to help. Not much in the med kit. There's morphine, though. Gotta get him to lay down. Oh God, what happened here? The man shuffled closer, reaching for her, his eye sockets filled with white, black drool spilling from his torn mouth. And in spite of what she knew was her duty, to do something to relieve his suffering, she reflexively took another step back. Duty was one thing. Her instincts were telling her to run, to get away, that he meant to do her harm. She turned, not sure what to do. And there were two more people, standing in the aisle behind her, both as slack-faced and damaged as a wide-eyed man, both moving towards her with the steady, staggering movements of horror movie monsters. The man in front wore a uniform. He was some kind of train attendant, his face gaunt, skull-like, and gray. Behind him, a man whose face had been partly torn away, revealing too many teeth on the right side of his mouth. Rebecca shook her head, raising her weapon. Some kind of disease, a chemical spill or something. They were sick. They had to be sick. Except she knew better even as the three men moved closer, raising bony gray fingers, moaning with hunger. Maybe they were sick, but they were also about to attack her. She knew it as surely as she knew her own name. Shoot! Do it! Stop! She shouted, turning back to the wide-eyed man. He was closer, too close, and if he was aware that she was pointing a gun at him, he'd gave no sign. I'll shoot!
Ah! The monster rasped, grasping for, baring dark teeth, and Rebecca fired. Two, three shots. The rounds tearing into the discolored flesh. The first two hitting his chest, the third blowing a hole just above his right eye. With the third shot, the creature let a mindless squeal, a sound of frustration rather than pain, and fell to the floor. She spun again, praying that the sound of shots had stopped the other two, and saw that they were almost upon her, their eyes glazed, their moans eager. Her first shot hit the uniformed man in the throat, and as he reeled back, she aimed for the second man's leg. Maybe I can just wound him, get him down. The uniformed man started forward again, his throat gurgling blood. God, she said, her voice small with shock, but they were still coming. She didn't have the time to wonder, to think. She raised her aim and fired two, three more times, all headshots. Blood and flesh sprayed, torn. The two men went down. Sudden silence, stillness, and Rebecca's wide gaze searched the car, her body thrumming with adrenaline. There were two, three more corpses, but none of them moved. What just happened? I thought they were dead. They were dead. They were zombies. No, there's no such thing. Rebecca checked to be sure there was another round in the chamber. Doing it automatically, she struggled to understand. They weren't zombies, not like in the movies. If they'd been truly dead, the shots wouldn't have made them bleed like that. Blood didn't pump if the heart wasn't beating. But they only went down after the headshots. True, but that could mean some sort of disease, maybe something that blocked pain receptors. The forest murders. Rebecca felt her eyes widen even more, putting the pieces together. If there had been some sort of chemical spill, or sickness, it might have affected any number of people up here in the woods, making them attack others. There had been recent reports of wild, feral dogs, too. Was it possible that the sickness was trans-species? Some of the victims had been partially eaten, bites made by human and animal jaws on at least two of the bodies. She had heard a soft movement and stopped breathing. Back by the door she'd come through, a seated corpse seemed to slump over in its seat. She watched it for what seemed to be an eternity, but didn't move again, the only sound of that of the rain outside. Corpse or victim of some tragic circumstance? She didn't want to find out. Rebecca backed away, stepping over the man with wide eyes, now very much dead, deciding she'd try the door in front of the car. She had to get off the train, tell the others what she'd found. Her head spun with what needed to happen next. The community would have to be alerted, a quarantine set up right away. The federal government should get involved too. The CDC or US AMRID, or maybe the EPA. An emergency with the power to close everything down, figure out what had happened. It would be a huge undertaking, but she could really contribute, really make a... The corpse at the back of the car shifted again, its head settling against his chest, and all the thoughts of saving Raccoon fled from her shocked mind. Rebecca turned and ran to the connecting door, sick with fear. All she wanted was out. It didn't take too long to find a weapon, and as luck would have it, Billy was intimately familiar with the standard issue MP handgun he'd found in the duffel bag stuffed under a seat. It was the same kind that his escort had carried. There was a spare clip and a half box of 9x19mm Parabellum rounds, too, as well as a flip-top lighter, another handy device to have around. No one ever knew when a fire might be necessary. He loaded up, stuffing the clip into his belt and extra rounds in his front pockets, wishing he had his fatigues on instead of civvies. Blue jeans weren't the best for carrying shit around. He started to look for a jacket, then decided against it. Even with the rain, it was a warm night, and slogging around in wet denim would be bad enough. The small pockets would have to do. He stood at the door that led back to the woods, weapon in hand, telling himself that he needed to get gone, and yet not leaving. He hadn't heard anything from the Stars kid since those seven shots. Only a few minutes had passed. If the kid was in trouble, it wasn't too late for him to step in and... Are you crazy? His brain shouted at him. Go! Run, you idiot! Right, of course. He had to leave. But he couldn't get the ring of those shots out of his head, and he'd spent too long as one of the good guys to turn his back on one of them if they'd needed his help. Besides, if the kid was dead, it would mean an extra weapon. Yeah, that's it, he mumbled, perfectly aware that he was searching for a more criminal-minded reason to justify his decision. There was no help for it, and he had to go look. With an internal groan, Billy turned away from the door, from Freedom, moving inside to the front of the car. He'd stepped through the first door, hesitating a beat in the connecting joint before grasping the handle to the second, into the next car. The only sound was the rain outside, working its way into a real storm. As quietly as he could, he slid the second door open and stepped through. The unmistakable smell hit him first. His jaws tightened as he surveyed the car, counting heads. Three in the aisle. Two up ahead on the right, and one directly to his left, slumped down in his seat, all of them dead. The man in the road. Billy frowned, realizing that one of the corpses around him could have passed for the dork who'd stepped in front of the Jeep, causing the crash. He'd only caught a glimpse of the guy, but remembered thinking he'd look sick. Maybe one of those people. But no, they'd been dead for days. So what was the kid shooting at? Billy moved closer to the nearest corpse, squatting next to it, taking in the wounds with a trained eye as he breathed shallowly through his mouth. The guy had been dead for a while. Part of his right cheek was missing, making him appear to grin widely up at Billy, and the edges of his torn tissue were rotting, black with decay. And yet there were two bullet holes in his brow, and a pool of very flesh blood surrounding his head and upper body like a red shadow. Billy touched the pool with the side of his hand, his frown deepening. It was warm. The next closest body, a train attendant, looked pretty much the same. Only one of the wounds was in his throat. He was no Einstein, but he wasn't entirely incapable of logic either. The fresh blood could only mean that these people just looked dead, and the fact that they were now full of holes suggested they tried to attack the Lone Stars member. Which means I'd better be damn careful, he thought, rising to his feet. He looked back at the body in the seat now behind him, his gaze narrowing. Had the man moved, or was it a trick of the light? Either way, he'd just as soon be somewhere else. He'd hurried up the aisle, stepping over corpses, trying to watch all of them at once, cursing his need to find the Stars kid. If only he didn't have a goddamn conscience, he'd been gone long by now. He slipped through the two doors, weapon ready, as he entered the next car. It wasn't a passenger car, wasn't as nicely decorated. From the entrance, he could only see a short corridor that turned up ahead, and two closed doors to his right. A few windows opened. He considered checking the rooms, aware that it would be the smartest move. Turning your back to an unsecured area was a bad idea, but he was starting to think that his conscience could go screw. He didn't want to secure the entire train. He just wanted to see that the kid was okay and then get the hell out. And if said kid doesn't show up in the next couple minutes, I'm deboarding anyhow. This sucks. Sucks wasn't the word. And it didn't begin to describe the low terror he felt in his gut. But he'd seen fear cripple the strongest men, and he knew better than to dwell on thoughts of monsters and darkness. Better to laugh it off as a bad dream and get on with things. He edged down the corridor, moving silently, sliding along the wall as the hall jagged right and then continued on, past an open door with a spill of cardboard boxes blocking the entrance. Storage room, probably. There were no bodies, at least, but a smell of rot hung in the air. The few unbroken windows he passed reflected a pale shadow of himself, only blackness and rain outside. He noted with dismay that some of the glass from the shattered panes was inside the car, scattered across the dark wood floor, which suggested that someone had been trying to get in, not out. Creepy. It looked like the corridor jagged left again up ahead, just past another closed door labeled Conductor's Office. He had to be near the front by now, and he saw a second pale shadow up ahead, reflected in a window, directly past the turn. He stopped, held very still, watched as the figure crouched down, his or her back to the corridor, oblivious to any threat from behind. If it was the Stars, he or she needed more training. Billy took the last few steps and raised his weapon, moving in behind the crouched figure. He knew he should avoid a confrontation. The kid was obviously fine and dandy, and he had other places to be. But he also wanted to know what had happened, and this might be his only chance for information. The Stars member turned, saw Billy, and slowly, slowly stood up facing him. Kid isn't far off the mark, he thought, staring down into the wide, innocent eyes of a teenager, a girl. God, were they hiring out of high school these days? She was small, at least a half foot shorter than he, and pretty. Reddish brown hair, slim, muscular build, even, delicate features. If she weighed more than 100 pounds, he would have been surprised. She'd been crouching in front of a dead man, his savage body slouched in the corner next to the car's exit, and if she was surprised to see him, she hit it well. "Billy," she said, her young voice clear and melodic, her words making him grit his teeth. "Lieutenant Cohen." Shit. Someone had found the Jeep after all. He kept the gun raised, directly at her right eye, playing it cool. "So, you seem to know me. Been fantasizing about me, have you?" "You are the prisoner being transferred for execution," she said, her voice taking on a hard edge. "You are with those soldiers outside." She thinks I did it. That I killed them, he thought. It was written all over her pixie face. He realized that she probably didn't know a thing about what was going on, if she hadn't connected the walking corpse guys to what had happened to the Jeep. And he saw no reason to disillusion her. She was trying to look tough, but he could see that he intimidated her. He could use it to get out of this. "Uh-huh, I see," he said. "You're with Stars. Well, no offense, honey, but your kind doesn't seem to want me around, so I'm afraid our little chat time is over." He lowered his gun, then turned and walked away, his gait easy and unhurried, as though he wasn't the slightest bit concerned by her presence. He was counting on her obvious inexperience and fear of him to keep her from acting. It was a calculated risk, but he thought it would pay off. He tucked his weapon into his belt at the small of his back and was halfway back down the corridor when he heard her jogging to catch up. "Shit, shit. Wait, you're under arrest," she said firmly. He turned to face her and saw that she hadn't even unholstered her weapon. She was doing her damnedest to look fierce, but she couldn't pull it off. If the situation had been less serious, any less bizarre, he would have smiled. "No thanks, dollface. I've already worn handcuffs," he said, holding up his left hand and jangling the hanging cuff. He turned and started away again. "I could shoot, you know," she called after him, but now there was an edge of desperation to her voice. He kept walking. She didn't follow, and a few seconds later, he was back through the first connecting door. He opened the door to the car of the dead passengers, wearing a shaky grin, relieved. It was better this way. Every man for himself and all that. And he saw that the dead man who'd been slumped in the seat at the back was now standing, swaying, his one remaining fixed eye on Billy's position. With a moan of hunger, the creature shambled forward, reaching out with shredded fingers as though to feel his way to where Billy stood. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Rebecca watched as Billy stalked out of the train car, feeling impotent and very young. He didn't even look back, as though she wasn't worth worrying about. "And apparently I'm not," she thought, her shoulders sagging. She hadn't expected him to be so, well, scary. Big, muscular, with dark steely eyes, an intricate tribal tattoo covering his entire right arm, both arms bared by a thin cotton undershirt. He looked tough, and after her terrifying run-in with the walking near dead, she hadn't been up to the task of taking him into custody. Not to mention, he got the drop on you. She'd found a lone corpse at the front of the car, one of the train workers, and had seen what looked like a key grasped in one cold hand. Since the only other door out of the car was locked, she had to try for it. It was that, or go back through the passenger car. She'd been so involved in trying to retrieve the key without snapping the stiff fingers that she hadn't heard the convict approach, not until it was too late. Now as she walked back to the front of the car, she saw that the locked door used a card reader, anyway. Great. So far, she was doing just great. She turned and reached for her radio, ready to admit defeat. If she could get the team in fast enough, they'd handle Billy. More important, she wouldn't be alone with the knowledge that some kind of plague had hit Raccoon. It was funny that nabbing a convicted killer was suddenly lower on the list of priorities. Bam, bam! Before she even touched the transistor radio, she heard two shots fired in the next car, the direction Billy had gone. She hesitated, not sure what to do. And in that instant, a window exploded behind her. She spun, shards of glass flying, and saw a human figure falling on the floor. "Edward!" The mechanic didn't respond. Rebecca rushed to her teammate's side, quickly assessing his condition. Besides, a massive open wound on his right shoulder, his face was gray with shock, his gaze bleary and unfocused. Every exposed part of his body was covered with contusions and abrasions. "Are you all right?" she asked. Ripped her med kit open, grabbing a thick gauze patch.
She tore the package apart, applied it to his shoulder, realizing with a sinking sensation that it might not do much good. From the massive amount of blood drenching his shirt, his subclavian had likely been severed. She was astounded that he was still alive, let alone he'd had the strength to jump through a window. What happened? Edward rolled his head towards her, blinking slowly. His voice was taut with pain. Worse than... we can't... She held the bandage firmly, but it was already soaked through. He needed a hospital, ASAP, or he wasn't going to make it. Edward's voice was getting weaker.
You must be careful, Rebecca, he slurred. Forest is full of zombies and monsters.
She started to tell him not to talk anymore, to conserve his energy. When more glass exploded, slivers of it raining over them. The window just to her left shattered. One, two giant dark shapes leaped through the broken pane, one disappearing around a jag in the corridor, and the other in their direction.
Zombies and monsters?
A dog. It was a big dog, but like no dog she'd ever seen before. It might have been a Doberman, once. But as it bared dripping teeth at her, flaps of skin and muscle hanging from its haunches, she realized that it, too, had been infected by whatever disease had struck the train's passengers. It didn't just look dead, it looked destroyed. Its eyes filmed with red, its body like some mad patchwork quilt of wet fur and bloody tissue. Edward wouldn't be able to protect himself. Rebecca slowly rose and took a step back from the dying mechanic, gun in hand. Though she couldn't remember drawing it, she could hear the second dog panting further along the corridor out of sight. She aimed for the animal's left eye, really understanding the true horror of the disease, whatever it was, for the first time. Her conflict with the near-dead passenger had been terrible, but so shocking she'd hardly had the time to consider what it all meant. Now, looking at the stiff-legged, monstrous beast in front of her, its growling rising into a hellish whine of hunger, she remembered her childhood pet, a shaggy black lab mix named Donner, remembered how much she'd loved him, and understood that this had probably been someone's pet once, too. Just as those people she'd shot had once been human. Had laughed and cried and come from families that would miss them, that would be destroyed by their loss. Disease, chemical spill, or attack. Whatever had caused all this, it was an abomination. The understanding flashed through her mind in a second and was gone. The dog tensed its shredded flanks, preparing to leap at her, and Rebecca squeezed the trigger, the 9mm rocking in her hands, the blast of sound deafening in the small space. The dog collapsed. Rebecca pivoted, aiming at the bit of corridor she could see, waiting for the second to appear. She didn't have to wait too long. With a snarl, the animal leaped around the corner, its jaws wide. Rebecca fired, the shot hitting its chest, staggering the dog back with a high whine of pain. It was still on its feet. It shook itself as though shaking off water, growling, readying to come at her again even as dark, ichorous blood poured from its wound. Should have killed it. That should have knocked it flat. Just like the people in the passenger car, it seemed that only a headshot would take it down. She raised her aim and fired again, this time hitting the center of its bullet-shaped skull. The dog fell, spasmed once, and went still. There could be more of them. She lowered the gun slightly, turning towards the broken windows and trying to see through the darkness and rain, straining to hear anything besides the storm. After a few beats, she gave up, kneeling next to Edward again, reaching into her pack for a fresh bandage, and stopped, staring at her teammate. The steady pump of blood from his shoulder wound was no more. She quickly felt for a pulse below his left ear, felt nothing at all. Edward gazed at the floor with half-open eyes, dead.
I'm sorry,
she whispered, sitting back at her heels. It seemed inconceivable that he was gone, that he'd died in the short time she'd been shooting at the dog things, and a wash of guilt swept over her. If she'd been faster, if she'd packed his wound better, but you didn't, and the longer you sit here feeling bad about it, the more likely it is that you'll end up joining him. Get moving. Rebecca felt her new guilt at the insensitive thought, but a glance at the open window got her to her feet. She'd have to assess her culpability later, when it was safe to do so. Her radio beeped. She grabbed it, backing away from the windows from poor Edward. Reception was bad, but she could tell it was Enrico. She held the speaker to her ear, hugely relieved to hear her captain's strong voice in between bursts of static. You copy? More information on... Cohen... Rebecca reluctantly stepped closer to the windows, hoping to hear better, but the static barely lifted. Institutionalized. Killed at least 23 people. Careful. What? Rebecca pressed the transmit button. Enrico, this is Rebecca. Do you read me? Over. A wave of static. Captain. Stars, Bravo, do you copy? Long seconds of more static. She'd lost the signal. Rebecca put the radio back in her belt. She had to get to the copter, tell the others about Edward, about Billy, and the train, and the terrible danger they were all facing. She changed clips for the 9mm, taking a moment to reload the half-spent one. With a final sorrowful look at her fallen teammate, she stepped over a dog body, doing her best to avoid stepping in the pool of blood surrounding it, and started back towards the passenger car. Although she knew she would be eager to run across the missing convict to arrest him, she hoped she wouldn't see Billy again. Edward's death, the dogs, she felt unsteady, incapable of taking charge. And 23 people? She shuddered, amazed that he hadn't killed her when he had the chance. In the passenger car, she saw the result of the two shots she'd heard earlier, the diseased victims she'd thought had moved but hadn't been sure about. It seemed he'd been alive, after all. He must have tried to attack Billy, the way the others had gone after her. She paused at the door back to the car she'd originally come through, looking over the decayed bodies of the people she'd killed. If Edward was right, if the woods were full of these things, she was going to have to move fast. And maybe Billy didn't kill those Marines. Rebecca blinked. It hadn't occurred to her earlier, but the Jeep may have been attacked, allowing Billy to escape, forcing him to run, in fact. It seemed likely. The two dead men had been mauled, not just shot. The dogs could have done it. She took her head. It didn't matter. He was a killer, either way. And if she wasn't up to the job of apprehending him, she better go get someone who could. As serious as the unknown sickness was, they couldn't just let Cohen run. She left the passenger car behind, hurrying through the empty car to the side door, hoping that the others were back at the helicopter safe. She reached for the handle, lifted it. She wasn't sure how to break the news about Edward. That was going to be rough. Rebecca frowned, pushing at the sliding door, which was refusing to slide. She tried the handle again, then again, and then kicked the door, cursing silently. It was stuck. Or Billy had locked it. Maybe to keep her from following him. Damn. She chewed at her lower lip, remembering that key in the dead worker's hand. She hadn't managed to pull it free, and then had forgotten about it after her run-in with Billy, not to mention Edward and the dogs. But then, who needed keys? She could just as easily crawl out through one of the broken windows. No big deal. She heard a sound, a door closing, and looked to her left, toward the back of the train. Someone was moving around in the next car over. Another sick passenger, probably? Or perhaps Billy was still on board? Either way, she was ready to get off, and she had her choice of windows to exit. Unless it's someone else back there. Someone who needs help. It could have even been another Stars, and now that she thought of it, she felt duty-bound to take a look, sensible or not. She walked quickly to the end of the empty car, readying herself for whatever could come next. It didn't seem possible that anything weirder could have happened tonight. But then, most of what had already happened didn't seem possible. She wanted to be prepared for anything. She opened the door to the next car and took it in with a sweep of the 9mm, vastly relieved to find it empty and blood-free. There were stairs going up to the left, a door straight ahead. That must have been the door she'd heard closing. And now it opened, and out walked Billy Cohen. Billy stopped, stared at the girl, at the weapon in her hand, and was glad that she was still alive, and that she had a gun and apparently knew how to use it. After what he'd just learned, having a partner might be his only chance to survive. "This is bad," he said, and could see that she knew he wasn't referring to the gun in his face. She didn't answer, only watched him steadily, her 9mm unwavering, and he raised his hands, understanding that game time was over. The dangling handcuffs slapped his wrist. "Those people? The ones you had to kill?" "They were sick," he said. "One of them tried to bite me. I shot him, and I found a notebook in his jacket. May I?" He started to lower one of his hands to reach for his back pocket. "No, keep your hands up," she said, jerking the weapon. She still seemed scared, but was apparently prepared to arrest him. "Okay, fine," he said. "You get it. It's in my right back pocket." "You're kidding, right? I'm not coming near you."
Billy sighed. It's important. Some kind of a diary. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Something about an investigation into a lab that's been abandoned or destroyed. But it also talks about a bunch of murders that had happened around here, and the possibility that a virus had been released, something called T-Virus. He saw a spark of interest, but she was playing it safe. I'll read it after you put the handcuff back on, she said. He shook his head. Whatever's happening, it's dangerous. Someone locked all the exits. Have you noticed? Why don't we cooperate until we can get out of this? Cooperate? Her eyebrows rose. With you? He stepped closer, lowering his hands, ignoring the gun in his face. Listen, little girl. If you haven't noticed, there's some pretty freaked out shit on this train. I, for one, want to get out of here, and we don't stand a chance of doing it alone. She didn't lower the gun. You'd expect me to trust you? I don't need your help. I can handle this on my own. And don't call me little girl. She was starting to piss him off, but he reined it in. He didn't need her as an enemy. All right, Miss Do-It-Yourself, he said. What should I call you? The name is Rebecca Chambers, she said. That's Officer Chambers to you. Well then, Rebecca, why don't you tell me your plan of action? He asked. You gonna arrest me? Great, do it. Call the whole force in, and tell them to bring heavy artillery. We can wait here for them. For the first time, she seemed to falter. Radio's out, she said. Hell, how'd you get here? He asked. Air or ground? How close is your transport? We came in by copter, but... There was a malfunction, she said. Not that it's any of your business. Put the cuff back on. My team is waiting outside. Billy lowered his hand slowly. How far? Are you sure they're still around? The girl scowled. This isn't 20 questions, Lieutenant. I'm taking you out of here. Turn around and face the wall. No. Billy crossed his arms. Shoot me if you have to, but there's no way I'm giving up my weapon or letting you cuff me. High color flared in her cheeks. You'll do what I tell you or I'll... Crash! Windows breaking in the upstairs compartment. Billy and Rebecca both looked up at each other. After a few seconds, they heard what sounded like heavy footsteps overhead. Slow and even. Then nothing at all. Dining room, Billy said. It was empty a few minutes ago. Rebecca studied him for a moment, then lowered her weapon slightly. She moved to the foot of the stairs and looked up, her youthful face set with a determined expression. Wait here, she said. I'll check it out. Billy almost smiled. He'd been in special forces for 7 years, had learned how to shoot quite probably before she got out of grade school, and she was going to protect him. I thought you didn't trust me, he said. What's to stop me from climbing out one of the windows, making my escape? The girl did smile. A small and cold affair. It's dangerous, remember? You don't stand a chance doing it alone. Before he could come up with something properly snappy, she had turned her back and walked up the stairs, apparently determined to prove to him she was a competent authority figure. Dumb kid. With all that was going on, proving herself shouldn't have been her top priority. He knew he should probably follow her, keep her from getting herself killed, but he wanted to wait a minute to think. He watched as she reached the top of the stairs and disappeared around a corner, not looking back. Like the song says, should I stay or should I go? Rebecca wanted to arrest him, but also meant that she needed to keep him alive, and she needed his help, no question. She was too inexperienced to be out here by herself. So who died and pointed you her personal savior? When are you going to get it? You're not one of the good guys anymore, remember? Running still wasn't out of the question, but he no longer felt so sure of his chances. If he needed more proof that the woods were hazardous, the notebook he found, the pocket journal of the man who'd attacked him, was more than enough. He pulled it out, flipping to the last few entries, the one that had caught his eye. July 14th. We heard today that the Ark lay lab, and we were being sent to check it out next week. Some of the others were worried about the conditions, about what might be left, but like the boss says, someone's got to take the first look. Might as well be us. The writer went on to talk about his girlfriend, who'd be angry that he was leaving town. Billy skipping ahead, skimming the pages for what he read before. July 16th. There's still so much we don't know about the responses to the T-virus. Depending on the species and environment, only minute doses of T bring about remarkable changes in size, aggressive behavior, and brain development. In animals, anyway. Nothing's immune. But until the effects can be better controlled, the company's playing with fire. Billy turned the page. July 19th. The day is finally approaching. I'm more anxious than I thought I'd be. The
The Raccoon City newspapers and TV stations have been reporting bizarre murders in the suburbs. It can't be the virus, can it? If it is... No. I can't think of that now. I have to concentrate on the investigation, make sure it goes smoothly. Changes in size, aggressive behavior, brain development, like, say, in a dog? In that bit about, in animals, anyway. What did this T-virus do to humans? Billy was willing to bet he'd already seen the results. Turn them into zombies, he muttered. Or as good as zombies, anyway. The one he'd shot had definitely been looking for lunch. What was it that cannibals called humans? Long pig, that was it. That walking mess had wanted some long pig, no question. Woods full of cannibals and monsters. He'd take his chances with the girl. She'd held her own so far, had killed at least three of those passengers and had managed to hang on to her sanity. He'd stay with her until they got out of this, and then he'd work out his escape before the rest of her team moved in, assuming there was any of her team left. A girl, the girl, screamed from overhead. A sound of pure terror. Billy grabbed his weapon and bolted up the stairs, two at a time, hoping he didn't wait too long to make up his mind. At the top of the stairs was a slight curve, then a door. Rebecca opened it slowly, carefully, with the muzzle of the handgun, and stepped inside. A thin, acrid haze of smoke greeting her, the low flickering of fire, making shadows dance on the walls. It was a dining car, like Billy had said, that once had been beautiful, tables covered in fine linen, the windows draped with cream-colored curtains. Now it was trashed, plates and broken glass everywhere. Tables overturned, the linen soaked with spilled wine and blood. And near the back, a lone figure sat haunched over a table, the hem of the tablecloth burning, the flames licking upward. Rebecca saw a small oil lamp smash in front of the table, the cause of the fire. The fire was still small, but it might not be for long. The man at the table was very still. And as Rebecca walked closer, she saw that he wasn't like the passengers below, wasn't infected by what Billy had suggested was the T-virus. He was an older, distinguished-looking man in a brown suit, his white hair slicked back, his head bent over his chest as though he'd nodded off during dinner. Heart attack? Or had he passed out? It didn't seem likely that he'd broken a second-story window and climbed inside, but as far as she could tell, there was no one else in the room. No one else could have made those heavy footsteps they'd heard. Rebecca cleared her throat as she moved toward him. "Excuse me," she said, stopping next to the table, noticing that his face and hands were wet, gleaming slightly in the firelight. "Sir?" No response. But he was breathing. She could see his chest moving. She leaned in, putting her hand on his shoulder. "Sir?" He started to raise his head, turning his face towards her, and there was a sick, wet sound like lips smacking over something slimy, and the man's head slid from his torso and toppled to the floor. The wet sound got louder. The decapitated body started to shake, to tremble with movement, as though filled with living things. Rebecca stumbled backwards, letting out a scream as the man's body slid apart like badly stacked blocks, great pieces of it falling to the floor. When the pieces hit, they disintegrated, the cloth of the suit changing color, turning black, becoming many things, each the size of a fist. Slugs, they're like slugs. Slugs with rows of tiny teeth. Not slugs at all, but leeches, fat and round and somehow able to mimic a man, even the man's clothes. Not possible. This can't be happening. She stumbled back farther, sick with terror as the individual creatures came together once more, melding into one another, the mass of an abnormal, bloating thing growing into a glistening tower of darkness. They reformed, took shape and color, and again became the old man she'd seen sitting at the table. She stared in shock, in disbelief. Even knowing that he was made up of hundreds, perhaps thousands of the disgusting things, she couldn't see the spaces between them. Would have known that it wasn't a man except that she'd seen it form for herself. The shade of the suit, the shape and the color of the body. The only clue that it wasn't a man was the strangely shining quality of its skin and clothes. It cocked its left arm back as though about to pitch a baseball, and then it snapped forward. The arm elongated, stretched impossibly. Rebecca was at least 5 meters away, but the glistening wet hand swatted at the air only centimeters from her face. She tripped over her own feet and hurried to get away, falling to the floor as the arm snapped back into place, then cocked backward, ready to strike again. Gun, stupid, shoot! She jerked the weapon up and fired, the first two shots going wild, the third and fourth disappearing into the thing's lurching body. She could see the knot flesh ripple when the bullets hit, the suit and the body beneath it undulating slightly, as though she were seeing it through heat waves off of asphalt on a summer day. The creature barely hesitated before whipping its arm toward her once more. She dodged, but the hand made contact, slapped against her left cheek. She screamed again, more from the feel of the hand than the strength of the blow. It was cold and slimy and rough, like shark skin dipped in pond scum. Before it withdrew, it slapped at her again, this time knocking the 9mm from her hand. The weapon skittered across the floor, ending up beneath one of the tables. The old man creature took another oddly lurching step, was now close enough that its next blow likely wouldn't be so easily evaded, and Rebecca just had time to think that she was dead. And bam, bam, bam! The creature was staggering back, and someone was firing again and again, the unexpected sound making her cringe as she staggered to her feet. The first few shots disappeared into its form like before, but the shooter kept at it, finding the monster's aged and shining face, its shining eyes. Dark liquid flew from sudden openings in the collective, leeches blowing to pieces on the sixth or seventh shot. The man-thing began to melt back into its component parts, a small, black animal slithering toward the broken windows as they hit the floor. Rebecca looked back at the door and saw Billy Cohen standing in a classic shooter's position, both hands on his weapon, his gaze fixed on the monstrosity in front of them as it finished its silent collapse, becoming many once more. The leeches continued to make for the windows, sliding on trails of slime over the debris-littered floor and up the stained walls, slipping effortlessly over the jagged edges of glass and into the storming night. They had finished their attack, it seemed. A strange, high singing drifted in over sound of the rain, still in shock. Rebecca walked to the window, carefully avoiding the remaining leeches as they streamed out of the car, retrieving her weapon before looking out to find the source of the singing. Billy joined her, making no effort to step over the strange creatures. Several popped wetly beneath his boot heels. In a flash of lightning, they saw him, standing on a low hill west of the train, a lone figure, male. From his height, from the width of the shoulders, raised long arms, a gesture of welcome, and sang in a surprisingly sweet soprano. His voice young and rich and strong. Latin, like something from church. As if that weren't bizarre enough, he seemed to be standing in a low, shallow lake, the ground rippling slightly all around him. It was too dark to see well, only deep shadows and silhouette marking the lonely singer. "Oh, Christ," Billy said. "Look at that." Rebecca felt the hairs on the back of her neck prickle, her mouth turning down into a grimace of disgust. There was no lake. The ground was covered with leeches, thousands of them, all moving towards the singing young man. She could see the hem of his long coat or robe flapping as the creatures flowing upward, disappearing beneath it. "Who is that guy?" Billy asked, and Rebecca shook her head. Maybe like the old man, made from the creatures. The train lurched suddenly. A rising, heavy mechanical sound filled the air, the floor vibrating beneath their feet. And then the train was moving, slowly at first, quickly picking up speed. She looked at Billy, saw the same confused surprise on his face that she knew she wore, and for the first time, she felt something besides angry disdain for the criminal. He was stuck in this nightmare, same as she was. And he did just save my life. "Still handling things yourself?" he asked, smirking, and she felt the tenuous bond between them disappear. Before she could say anything, though, he seemed to realize that his passive-aggressive stab at humor wasn't what the situation called for. "I think we could both use a little help here," he said. "How about it? Just until we're out of this, all right?" Rebecca thought about the viral victims she'd seen, those she'd killed, about what Edward had said that the woods were full of zombies and monsters. She thought about the man made of leeches, and their strange, singing master out in the rain, and finally about the fact that someone, or something, had started the train. Even if Enrico and the rest of the team were still alive, they were falling farther and farther away by the minute. "Yeah, okay," she said. And though his grim and arrogant demeanor didn't change, she thought that Billy was relieved, and she knew that she was. End of chapter 3.